The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another Prog Report Top 5 podcast. Thanks again for joining us. If you've missed any back episodes, you can always go to progreport.com, find everything there. They're also on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, YouTube. Of course, we have Prog Report Radio, which you can always check out. And our Facebook and Twitter page will always keep you up to date on everything going on the site, as far as podcasts, news, tours, interviews, etc., anything that's going on. The response to the podcast has been amazing. The Prog Band Fantasy Draft we did was a lot of fun. And, did really well, and hopefully you guys got a chance to check that out. And if you didn't, I highly recommend that one. That was a fun and interesting one to do for sure. 2018 has been a great year, a lot of great music coming out. And as we wind down the year, there's still a few more albums on their way. And one, of course, that we're all really excited about is the new album from Roy Nastolt of The Flower Kings, Transatlantic, The Sea Within, and lots of other albums and projects. He has a new project coming out called Roy Nastolt, The Flower King. The album's titled Manifesto of an Alchemist, and it's out November 23rd. And we have a really special top five today with Mr. Roy Nastolt. We're going to talk about his band that he founded, The Flower Kings, and we're going to do a top five Flower Kings songs. We're really happy to have Mr. Roy Nastolt with us. Roy, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, well, this is a real treat and an honor, and thank you. I know you have a lot going on. You're rehearsing for the tour. You have the new album. You got all this stuff happening, which we will get to along throughout the course of the show. Also, of course, I want to introduce our other guest, Jeff Bailey, who you guys know already from a number of podcasts, and his Yes Years 50 podcast, which everybody really likes. So, Jeff, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, so the reason that I thought this would be a perfect time for this is not only do you have a brand new album coming out, Roy Nastolt's The Flower King, Manifesto of an Alchemist, which I want to find out about that title, coming out November 23rd. You just released a single, Lost America, which is awesome. There's also a tour that you guys are doing in Europe with Spock's Beard and a bunch of stuff. So tell us all about what's going on. Let's what's going on with the tour? When is that starting? What's happening there?
Well, actually, before we go on tour in Europe together with Spock's Beard, we're heading out to South America with the same band and playing, Brazil for sure. We're playing Argentina. We're playing Chile. We're playing Peru, and we're playing Mexico.
Awesome.
So yeah.
Have you been to those countries to play with Flower Kings before?
Yes. We've been a couple of times with the Flower Kings to Argentina and to Brazil. We've been once to Chile. We have not been to Peru, but we've been to Venezuela. But we're not doing Venezuela this time. And we've been many times to Mexico, of course. So it's... but I'd imagine... I can't remember now, but, name of the venues, I'm not sure. I think I recognize some venue that I felt like, we have played there. So it's possible we played there. Maybe we played because we did one short tour with Transatlantic down to South America. So it's possible have been Transatlantic. But anyway, it seems to be nice venues, and the audience is always nice down in South America, I think. And one interesting thing is that it's usually more of a mixed audience. Whereas if you play, let's say, Holland or Germany or Finland or something like that, it's usually lots of guys in their 40s, 50s. with short hair, most of them, a nice daytime job, you know, and they like Prague, so right. they go to concerts. But in South America, it's different, you know. It's a lot of younger audience. It's a lot of women, I would say, almost like 50-50 or at least 60-40, which is nice. And to me, it seems also that it's not like the guys bringing their girlfriend to see this boring band, you know. They don't like, I don't like Prague. Do we really need to go to this Prague concert? Right. I know you love this band. It's not music. No, I mean, honestly, actually, it seems like, I mean, they're dancing, they're singing along to the music. So it seems like Prague, for whatever reason, seems to be something that is more like, not like a gender thing, you know, that it's just guys liking right. their Prague and they have all these Pink Floyd albums and Genesis album knows what strings Steve Hackett plays or whatever, you know, all that kind of, you know. Right. It's more like, well, Prague is Prague, but it's also it's music that you can dance to listen to, you know,
under
iPod or something like that, you know, when you're jogging, and why not? I think that's a very healthy way of sort of listening to any kind of music, regardless of the time signatures of how many chords there are in a song or yeah. or whatever the lyric topics. So it feels, to me personally, it feels fresh to come down to South America or even the Southern European countries to play this kind of music.
I'm sure they love it. That's fantastic. Because it always seems like it's just Europe or America sometimes, you know. So you get out of there, that's great. And then you do have after that the Europe tour with Spock's Beard, which is to celebrate sort of the 25th anniversary of the label, also Inside Out Music, right? Which you've been involved with the whole 25 years or 20 years maybe, or how long has it been?
It's more than 20 years, I think. I think yeah. we signed with them, or could it be maybe? Let me see. I frankly, I don't remember. I think we sound in 98 or 99, maybe. So it's, yeah, it would be like 20 years then.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. And a lot of the side projects that you've done as well, right? What do we got? Transatlantic, Sea Within, the Anderson Stolt stuff even came out on there. So that's pretty
I've
cool.
I've been on Tangent and Carmichanic and
that's right.
on my Broding's album, so I've been everywhere.
Yeah.
and actually sort of also helped to get a few bands signed to the label. So yeah, I you know, I consider them to be my friends, the people at Inside Out and the people at Central Media. For many, many years, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. I also I want to ask you about the new album, which comes out later this month, November 23rd. So talk about the name. It's not just Roy Nastolt, and it's not the Flower Kings. It is Roy Nastolt, the Flower Kings. So talk about that and what that means.
Frankly, I don't know, really. Honestly. It's something that was constructed by the record label because I think my idea was to just release an album with music. And what do you do if you release an album with your music? You call it by your name, of course, which in this case means I'm Roy Nastolt. So for me, it would be natural to release an album under the name Roy Nastolt, you know.
Right.
Because that's, whatever happens, wherever you turn, whatever happens with music or with groups. So, in the end, there's always you, you know. And it's up to you if you want to write music, if you want to release it. It's totally up to you. And so that's something no one can take from you, really, your name or your music. And that sort of create a sort of a freedom for me personally. Because you're always in bands, and there's always going to be someone that don't want to tour in a certain period of time, or there's someone that doesn't want to record a new album or don't have the time to write music for an album. So you're always sort of dependent on other people, you know. And it's in my nature. I'm a kind of, you know, I want to work, And I want to work all the time, and I want to be creative, you know. And then if you're surrounded with people that are maybe not as eager to work all the time, then you, you know, in my case at least, get a bit frustrated. So this kind of forced me into or pushed me into the idea of actually just recording an album, you know, and asking people, whoever I wanted to, can you sing a little bit on my album? Can you play some Hammond organ on my album? Can you drum on my album? Which makes everything, you know, easy and very natural, I think. But when it came to the release, and then that's a different story, because then we have Inside Out and Central Media and the people at Sony, and they want something that sort of they want to have. If they want to release the money to for your advance, they want to have some kind of guarantee that the album will sell, you know.
Like so the name recognition really was maybe
Yeah. And I had no problem with it, really. It was just like, it felt a bit weird to begin with, but, you know, honestly, it really doesn't matter. I think from my point of view, actually, I think that the audience know, but I could be wrong, of course. I think the audience know, you know, they find out. To them, it really doesn't matter. They either they like the music or they don't, and whatever label you put on it really doesn't matter. But I'm sure there could be situations where it actually helped to have the Flower King label put on the album. Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, again, I think backing up what Roy has said there, you know, he's someone who has been in an awful lot of bands and is as well known. I really enjoyed the album and can hear the parts that sound maybe like, you know, like the Flower Kings, and parts that sound like lots of, you know, lots of other bits from throughout, you know, what's a really long career. Actually, I was just looking, because I think actually next year you're probably about 45 years in music. Would that be right?
It's possible. I started professionally when I was 17.
Yeah. Wow.
And I you probably do the math better than me.
I think I got Kaipa in 1970. Wikipedia tells me you joined Kaipa in 1974, which was
74. Yeah, that's right. And we recorded the first album in the summer of 75, I remember, and it was released just before Christmas in 75. So that was my first professional band, my first professional recording that was released, you know, in 75. So it's a long time and many albums. And I mean, all the albums in between, not only the prog stuff. I think I counted, actually a couple of years ago, I counted, and I think it was around 200.
Wow.
Recordings.
Wow, that's impressive. I mean, that's up there in the music record books. It's got to be. I mean,
I don't know.
Maybe some people don't know that, but that's impressive.
Yeah, I have to add all these albums, of course, are not under my own name or in a band that I was. It's more like,
sure.
Well, let's say maybe half of them are whatever. Under the Kaipa, the Flower Kings, and all my sort of my own bands, but then there's always like studio recordings I've done, you know, added guitars on someone else's album, you know, whatever pop or folk music or jazz or, you know, and stuff that I produced where I maybe played some guitar or a tambourine or sang something, you know, and so it's everything taken together. I think it's around 200, you know.
Yeah,
but there's an awful lot just in the last 20 years since I signed with Inside Out, or since I started the Flower Kings. You know, it's 25 years. Wow, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, I can't keep track, and it's so funny because, you know, you see there's like there's an old message board for the Flower Kings, and I get it in my mail still, and I saw just today I was laughing because I see this guy. He was hoping to see certain songs played on the tour, and so that would be like, oh, I hope they play Stardust We Are, and I hope they play whatever, The Truth Will Set You Free. And then he started counting songs, and what if they play? Maybe we can ask them. Maybe they have 15 minutes and we can just the Alice song. Oh, can you play that song? And I have a problem even remembering if they say a song title. I have to think very hard to know. I mean, those songs are the most common songs that we played or had in the set list many years. Of course, I remember those songs. But then if someone just give me a title of a song, you know, that was on Retropolis or Back in the World, I may not even know what song it is. Or could you sing it? No, I can't. Could you show that guitar riff?
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Yeah.
They could play it for you on their iPhone first, and then you can remember it.
Yeah, maybe.
And so. are you counting then? I mean, is this your first solo tour, or are you counting it as a solo tour? Are you counting it as something halfway between that and the Flower Kings tour? Or
frankly, I don't care. You know, I played with, as you know, with many many bands, and I treat every band pretty much in the same way. You know, in Transatlantic, I'm one fourth or one quarter of this band, you know, and in whatever Kaipa, it's, well, I'm a composer in that band too, and a player. I was it in it, and now we're sort of getting together again, and we made an album, and I treat all the musicians or all the bands pretty much the same way, so I don't really distinguish between the bands, you know, and my position and anything like that.
I wanted to get the top five going here and then see if we can maybe get some more discussion in between. So what I want to do, Roina, we're each going to go and we're each going to go in order and pick our number five song, and then we'll go to 4, 3, 2, 1 like that. But I'd like to give you the first place to start. So what's your number five Flower King song that you want to mention here?
To be absolutely honest, it's absolutely impossible to. I mean, I can't do something.
I know,
like
it's putting
this.
You on spot. I know.
I can't be serious, you know, because I mean, just looking at when we put together a set list now. Of course, it's. I'm trying to pick songs that I like, but then on the other hand, there's the keyboard player and say, "Oh, we got to play this song. I love the Flower Kings. You know, he's kind of new to this, and we have to have this song in the set list." And has to say, "Oh, we got to play this song because I really love this bit, you know." And Jonah say, "Oh, you know, we got to play this song."
Well,
and it's just a big pile of songs, and I'm in the middle of everything, you know. And then you have writing, you know, on Facebook or whatever, and asking, "Oh, will you play this song? Will you play that song?"
Well, this is the chance for you to just do the ones you want to do. So
no, but what I was going to say is. When I look at the songs, I don't know. Of course, I have picked five songs, but, you know, don't take it too serious.
Of course. Yeah. No, all in good fun. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's like if you would ask me tomorrow, I'd probably say something different.
You know what? We might do the same thing. We struggle with this just as much, believe me.
Yeah. Well, if I pick the, well, if we go backwards, then from the bottom, whatever the bottom is in my view is kind of not the bottom really. It's a great song that was the opening track for possibly my favorite album of the band that is Stardust We Are, and the song that's opening that album is a song that's called In the Eyes of the World.
Yeah.
Great. And I think that song has everything I like about the more, well, let's say, powerful side of prog rock that has a bit of metal. It has a bit of classic prog, you know, and a bit of old and a bit of new, and great playing from everyone, in particular the drummer, Jaime Salazar. think does a great job on that one. I simply like the song, and I realize now when rehearsing it that this is gonna be great. You know, it's very tricky to play. You know, it's not easy to play. And I see my well would be like the Roy in the 40s recording this and trying to make this fantastic prog song, a prog epic, and putting in everything in the song. And I would say, looking back now, I say, yeah, there's plenty in this song. You know, there's so much, but really cool stuff in there. You know, lots of really cool Hammond things and odd rhythms and breaks and some very cool guitars, and the vocal melody isn't bad either. So it's a great song, all in all.
In the crystal ball, what may come in my way? Tell me the truth, do you love me? 'Cause I haven't come here to play. Listen to voodoo tongue teachers, just taste the stardust a place in your mouth.
Yeah, one of my favorites as well. And you're right. I mean, it's a good, like, real upbeat, you know, rocker on the what's going to be, when you start listening to it, an album that goes in 1,000 directions. But that's right away just a hit shot to the face, you know, with how that song opens. So I love that one.
I think it's probably the most kick-ass opening track of any Flower Kings album ever. Because we normally put like a big epic in the beginning. And, and when I say epic, it's usually like a 25, 30-minute song, you know. and they would normally start building, you know, with some very spacey synths and stuff, and then gradually building up. But this one is really kicking butt from the get-go. And that's kind of unusual for being a Flower Kings album, I think.
Awesome. That's perfect. All right, Jeff, what's your number five?
Okay, again, like Roina, whenever you're coming to pick, it's incredibly difficult. Some of these we've done before for artists, probably with even fewer albums than Flower Kings have. We've actually done best album picks, so this was really good. And so I suppose my starting one relates to how I first got into the Flower Kings, and that was via Transatlantic. And being from the UK, I'd have heard of Marillion. I was very into Spock's Beard, Neil's music, and was aware of Dream Theater. Roina was the unknown for me whenever Transatlantic came out, but it was very clear to hear a brilliant contribution to that band. And so the song that I have is the one that they did on the first tour in the medley, where they did a medley of all the sort of related band songs, which is "There Is More to This World" from Retropolis. So I'd say the first time I heard that was the little excerpt in the Transatlantic live medley. And again, it's a classic prog intro. It's got time signatures going all over the place from the very start, you know, which obviously ticks a big box for a prog fan. You've got Roina's very distinctive vocal, and it then moves into a number of different solo sections, some crazy stuff, those kind of Zappa type moments that you throw into there, and then actually a very to my ears a very sort of Yes-like acoustic section where Hasse is singing there as well, and a big close. So in terms of a kind of 11-12 minute whatever it is, prog epic, you know, it is, you know, it's a classic one for me. And as I say, the connection from one of the very first things I heard of the band.
Oh, run, brother, hide if you can. Take these words from the medicine man. I saw the sign of men with cold hearts, with heart of stone and holy rolling stone. There's more to this world than we see. There's more to this world than we touch with our hands.
How did you pick that to be the excerpt when you guys were doing that, Roy, of all the material? What was the deciding issue?
It was actually not me picking it. I think it was Neil picking it. And I remember the first time meeting Neil, we were playing with the Flower Kings at what was the Progfest in Los Angeles in 98, I think, or could have been 97. 97, perhaps. And we were playing there, and I think we were about to set up, could have been for sound check or could have been for the actual gig. And I was sort of fiddling around with my amp, and then I just looked up, and there stood this guy with long hair, because Neil had long hair at the time. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Bring back the long hair, please. Do you hear me, Neil? Bring back the long hair.
Right.
And he was, it was so funny because I was standing there fiddling around with my amp, and I looked up, and there was Neil, and he didn't say anything. He just started singing, "There is more to this world."
Wow, that's funny.
And with a big smile, and then he stopped and said, "I really like that song." And then he told some story about him and his wife driving the car, and you know, and they found this Swedish band, and finally a prog band that actually can sing, or have someone that can sing or something like that.
Right.
You know, or have great melodies, you know, it's not just prog fiddling. And that was actually our first meeting, you know, and of course when we got to play together in Transatlantic, and I think it was, you know, Neil who said, "Oh, please, can we please do There's More to This World?" And I said, "Sure, whatever you want to do, it's fine. I like the song, so oh, why not?"
Cool. That's great. That's really cool. You know, so I'm going to go for my number five. But I, you know, it's funny, Jeff, because I almost have the same story with discovering the Flower Kings the same way. I mean, I knew. Being in America, it was Dream Theater, and then I somehow stumbled upon Spock's Beard, you know, sort of American bands, and before internet, sort of maybe around the time just, I didn't know what the Flower Kings was yet, and obviously with Neil and Mike being in Transatlantic, I checked that out, and I loved it. You know, right away, loved your contributions in Transatlantic, and then you got to, okay, well, now we got to know who this guy is, and then, you know, that kind of thing, which, but prog fans love that. The minute there's a new band or somebody, a new member in something, and you get to start researching, that's like the greatest. But for my number five, I'm going to go to something that I didn't actually hear until way later when I started going back and rediscovering some of the albums that I had missed from the band that you've done. And I'm going back to the first record, Back in the World of Adventures, and it's the I guess almost the title track, the opening track, World of Adventures. Mm-hmm. That's going to be my number five, and I think God, that song's amazing. I'm trying to imagine where you were back then writing that, because it is so already advanced and a sign of what was already going to be. I mean, it's not like some band starting off and it's, you know, pieces of what's going to become. It's already amazing there. And it's way before more people started to know what you were doing. And that song is just insane. So, I mean, how did you come up with that? And was that always the vision, once you came up upon that sound and you wrote that, that this is the direction I want to start going.
Yeah, I think the direction was already set. But let's put it this way. When I did the very first album that was just called The Flower King, that was released in 94, the album with the Flower King guy painting
right.
on it. When I did that, and I had absolutely no idea there was a crowd of prog people out there, you know, in whatever, England and Norway and Finland and America and South America and Japan, all that music. And, you know, I just wanted to make something that meant something to me, you know, and I had no illusions of actually selling albums. But once I did that album and all the great reviews were coming in and I started selling albums, I was almost shocked, you know. So I think it was probably from that shock, you know, realizing there is an audience for this kind of music. And in this euphoria, you know, of realizing that, I probably started writing more music. And Back in the World of Adventures was one of those tracks. Yeah. So it's that's the spirit of the song, you know.
Yeah, that's another one of those uplifting kind of standard Flower Kings type songs, I think, but love that one.
Back in the world of adventures, in grand new adventures, expect to fly. I'm deep into sonical changes and radical strangeness, and I don't know why. We run the field in the summer night. In silent kisses in black and white. And we'll make footprints on a high ground. We're children of the Woodstock nation.
All right, so we're going to go back around to you. Roina, you're number four, or the next song, we'll call it.
That's actually the very, very, very first song on the very, very first album. That's called The Flower King. It may not have been the first song I wrote for that album, but it was sort of placed in the beginning of the album. For obvious reason, it has this very catchy chorus, which is also uplifting. The lyrics are positive, and there's something very, I don't know, uplifting. There's some kind of a, I don't know, there's something about the song that just makes me smile. And it's fun to play it live, as we did, of course, in the beginning when the band started touring. And it's a kind of nice mix between this catchy, almost, well, sing-along or a pop chorus, but the song also has the middle section with lots of instrumental stuff that's fun to play.
Yeah,
and a bit of up-tempo. And, well, it has, like the other songs, like the song you mentioned before, Back in the World of Adventures, it has many different themes and workouts all through the whatever 12 or 10 minutes, you know. it sort of defined the sound, I think, for what was to be the Flower Kings, you know, with the guitars, with the keyboard sounds and lots of vintage sounding keyboards, you know. This time, and this was also, you have to remember, a time when there were many new synths coming out, and many of the contemporary bands, they were using lots of that stuff, you know, lots of whatever, can't remember now, but from coming out from Korg and Roland and Yamaha, those people, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of modern big layer sounds, but I was more into electric pianos, like Fender piano and the Wurlitzer and Hammond organs and Mellotrons and the Moog and stuff like that. So I think that kind of sound was manifested on the album, and in particular on that song, I think.
just verify. The genius of it all is the cycle of all living. Hear the children, hear the children call. We believe in the light, we believe in love, every precious little thing. We believe you can still surrender, you can serve the flower king.
When you look back and at, you know, like the very first song like that, like you're saying, something like that, and you then compare that to like something from the new album and where your head is and where you're writing and how you're looking at a new album. How much has changed in how you approach an album and how you song right now versus back then?
Well, I think a lot have changed, but at the same time, not much have changed. the music scene. Well, the big change for me is actually that I'm aware of there's actually a movement going on, you know, and there are fans that want to buy these type of albums. This that sort of waiting for all the whatever Spocksbeard albums, the Flower Kings albums, or the Stephen Wilson albums, or whatever, you know, these type of albums to come out, because that's their type of music they want to. That's the type of music they want to buy, you know, or they want to collect. And so that's something I was absolutely not aware of, because when I started out, I felt like all the prog scene or the symphonic rock prog was something that was in the past, you know, besides maybe a couple of bands. There's a couple of bands from England like Marillion and Pendragon, these guys, you know, and as you say, Dream Theater in America. But Dream Theater was more metal, and bands like IQ, Pendragon, they didn't make much of a splash outside of England, really. I was aware of them, but you know, it wasn't the same. It wasn't any Genesis or Gentle Giant or Yes, you know. The music wasn't really at the same level, I felt, at least. I wasn't really running to the shop to buy a Pendragon album, if I'd be honest. But you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but it didn't hold the same.
Right.
I don't know. There's something that's magic about the old Yes albums or the King Crimson albums.
Sure.
Or Genesis, because they're playing.
Well, they might even say that.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do, because there's something that. Thinking back, you know, and looking at it, you can see they had everything, you know. They had great songwriters, they had great vocalists, they had great players, all of them. This was just not one guy in the band. I mean, normally you're lucky if you have one really talented, whatever, guitar player or drummer or something, you know, that can lift the band to another level. But I mean, these guys, like, yes, they had, it's crazy, they have people like Bill Bruford on drums and Steve Howe on guitar, Chris Squire, you know, Rick Wakeman and John Anderson on vocals. It's just insane. Or Emerson, Lake and Palmer, three guys, you know, that can really play very complicated stuff, you know, and all the other bands too. And even bands like Genesis may not be looked at as prominent instrumentalists, but I think they were really, listening back to some stuff they've done, you know, and even some rehearsal stuff they've done, it's just amazing how well they played the music, you know, in the beginning. This was already around 72 or 73, you know, when they were making albums like Foxtrot and Selling England. So I think that to come up with a band that has the same quality is not easy today, you know.
Yeah.
You're lucky if you have one or two guys that are really good players or composers or I think it's
and I think they existed in a world, you know, of much more innovation, you know, and you know, getting to grips with new but pretty basic technology, you know, like a Mellotron, and you know, how can we use that, or you know, what happens if we put a Hammond organ through a Marshall amp, and all that kind of experimentation that today, you know, we have all of that technology in our pocket on the phone, and it's already dialed up. It's already there. You don't need to figure out how to do it. And that's why I think probably, as you say, the thing that's really, really important is then the writing that sits underneath it, because you can do all the, you know, all the stuff, all the different things today, but it's the writing and it's the songs and it's the material that actually is what lifts and carries it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jeff, you're up.
Okay, I'm going to come a bit closer to the present day with my number four choice. So I've only ever seen the Flora Kings live twice, living over in this remote island of Ireland. And it wasn't in Ireland. I was over for two shows on the tour that they did with the Neil Morse Band in 2012, 2013. And there was, obviously, given the length of the songs, the set lists of those shows were probably four or five songs. But the track that I had heard, but that really came to life when I heard it live, was Rising the Imperial. Mm-hmm. I was just doing my homework on my list before we dialed in there, and I realized that actually that's a song that Jonas wrote. So out of all of the hundreds of songs that Roine has written, I think he co-wrote the words. But you know, probably more laid back than some of the crazy prog thing. You know, a very, you know, Pink Floyd-y type vibe, a brilliant guitar solo, which I just remember at those shows going, I really need to go and check that track out, you know, because it just came to life. And then there's that conclusion where you know, Hasse comes in with the, you know, with the high vocals. That is just, you know, it's probably not a track that might feature in a lot of people's top tens, but it's one that, having seen it in concert, I'll not forget it.
Count them angels that God once sent, and in the turmoil you just look for friends. The sweetest devil hides the blackest core. I scratched the loudest color surface, and I found a foe. Rising the tide, Imperial, leaving the world.
I think it actually, at the time the album was released, I think it was one of the tracks that attracted people and reviewers, and people felt it was a really good track. And it is a really good track, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice contrast, because, as you say, it's more like, not really scaled down, but it's not so complicated to play, and it's not like a complicated construction. So I think that it's easy to, you can hear it once or twice and you get the picture, you understand what the song is about, you know. Which makes it kind of a prog song, but also more like an easy listening prog song. Which is nice as a you know, for a change, you know, because there's other stuff on the album, and maybe my personal favorite on that album is the opening track. But I think Rising the Imperial seemed to be something that people really enjoyed seeing us play live, you know, because it's easy to take in, you know, as you say, it has that typical, like the Gilmour guitar solo style thing that people can relate to and everything. So
yeah,
I think it's another side of the Flower Kings.
One of the things I'm interested in that sort of, it relates a little bit to that song, is it's quite number one, it's quite unusual in prog, I suppose, to have a band that has really two lead vocalists. And you know, what brought Hasse to the Flower Kings, and you know, what do you think it is that he brings to everything?
Hasse was actually brought in before the Flower Kings was a band. Hasse was was brought in for the very first record that was called The Flower King,
yeah.
Which was basically a solo album I did, pretty much what I just did, you know, with the Manifesto of an Alchemist.
Yeah.
I made an album and I just brought in some people playing or singing on that album, and Hasse was one of them. So he sang on two songs on that album, and he could sing like no other in the more like the higher register notes, high pitch notes that I can't reach really. So, yeah. So that was, and I, because I remember I was working at studio and I heard his band a couple of years earlier, and I remember that singer, you know, and he was a nice guy and he was singing all these crazy high pitched notes, you know.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a metal singer, but also there were qualities that were sort of bordering to people like John Anderson and these kind of people. So I was thinking, why not bring in him and sing the chorus for The Flower King, for instance?
Yeah.
Which I did. And when time came to actually take the band out and play live shows, it was natural for me to ask Hasse. And I think his very first show he played was in Canada, in Quebec City. And he was scared to death because it was not only for joining the band, but I asked him to play guitar. And I said, I've seen you play guitar. And he said, no, I can't. I said, yes, you can. Of course you can. All I'm asking is that you play a few chords, a few riffs, and I've seen you do it. You can, I'm sure we can do it. So it was, yeah. I think he was a little bit, I don't know, he didn't really have the confidence to do it first, but I was sort of pushing him and so we did that and we were playing live and then time was up for recording more albums. And then, you know, I used him for more songs and it became sort of it was impossible to actually to go out and play the songs without Hasse because his voice is very distinctive and recognizable. So I couldn't really go out playing it alone, or I couldn't go out playing it with some other singer. It had to be Hasse, you know. And as I said, he's a super nice guy. So it all came very natural.
All right, let me jump in here so we don't take 3 hours. Okay, I'm going to jump all the way to the, I guess we'll call it the last Flower Kings record, or the last one to have come out, Desolation Rose, and it's the opening track, Tower One. And that's going to be my number five. And, you know, the reason I sort of was listening to a lot of prog, obviously, always, but I think I missed Banks of Eden even coming out, and so I knew Flower Kings were sort of on hiatus. And then I started the Prog Report around 2013, and that's when I started getting press releases from labels and, you know, more news and starting to become more aware of everything that's coming out. And then I think that's when Desolation Rose came out. And I was like, a new Flower Kings, that's a surprise, you know. And I love that album. I think it's one of the best albums you guys did. The opening track is just this massive epic, brilliant, kind of on the heavier side also a little bit. Great. One of my favorite songs. But she walked me slowly through burning spear. She'll be my shelter. Well, let me ask you something about the band now. When that ended, is that for good? Is this solo album just where you are right now and you don't know, or where is the band sort of generally? Because it's a lot of the same guys, right? Right now with you.
Well, there's Jonas playing bass and Hasse, of course. And then I have two other guys, an Italian drummer, Mirko Di Maio, who is sort of an unknown up till now. But he's a great drummer and super nice guy. And I think he really is... He play many different styles, you know, and that's something you need to be able to do in a band like the Flower Kings, you know. You need to sort of go between almost like jazz to orchestral percussion to metal and pop. You have a nice groove. It's important, you know. Mm-hmm. So we brought him in, and we have Zach Kamins, who is a keyboard player who lives in California. Someone who I worked with as a producer some 5 or 6 years ago for An Endless Sporadic, which was his band, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. An Endless
Sporadic. Yeah, I am actually.
Yeah.
So and I knew him more like a guitar player, but. And someone who played occasionally keyboards, but he turned out to be a keyboard player too. And at the time we were planning the tour, he just sent me an email saying, I'll be your second keyboard player. He was thinking Thomas was going out with us and playing. So he said, I'd like to be your second keyboard player. And I said, well, I know you can play the guitar because he's a great guitar player. And I said, send me a tape where you play some 15 minutes of a Flower King song, and he did, and it sounded fantastic. So and he loves the music, of course, so he's a big fan, and that I think that helps, you know. You gotta have love for the music when you play the music, and so I think this is what we do now, and I can't really tell. There's no commitment, there's nothing said about, okay, let us do this for another 5 years or anything like that. It's more like we do this tour and then we'll see if it's fun and everyone seems to be happy and on board, then maybe we may do more shows and maybe even record with the unit as it is, you know. We'll see. I'll keep it open, you know. That's what I want to do right now, and sign up to anything for a very long time.
Cool. All right, great. All right, Rainer, your next choice, your third song?
That would be a song that actually finished the album, the double album, Unfold the Future, and this track is called The Devil's Playground, which is kind of an odd song for the band. It has lots of symphonic sections in it. It has... I think it has a blend of myself and Daniel Gildenlöv singing. It's kind of a long song, so it's one of the big epics. The album is sort of bookended with the Truth Will Set You Free starting the album, and The Devil's Playground is finishing the album. So they're both around the 30 minutes. So it's nothing you will hear at the discotheque, I think.
That's right.
Radio. But I kind of like the song. It's interesting because it has all these middle sections with kind of symphonic orchestrations and stuff. And it has, well, I like the lyrics. I like the song as it is, as a whole. And we did play it one tour, I think, but since then we haven't played it for a long, long, long time. Usually the band think it's too complicated to play. And I usually say, no, come on, guys. Let's play it, you know. I don't mind rehearsing another 2 weeks, you know. But no, we have only 5 days to rehearse, you know.
Chaos in the galaxy of hate. picking out your bird of prey. Let him rule a thousand years, segregate and fuel the fears, drawn into a tasteless dream, out of tune from start to finish, restless, far away from home. Him calling me a senseless liar, leave it with a bitter taste of blood. But then we're most amazed, how you step your way up to the top. You seem to never stop. This is how you raise the cane. This is what you teach the children. Welcome to the doggy dog. Foolish in the devil's playground. Then I saw you.
I mean, you could say that about more than half the material, right? It's
oh, dude, come on. I'm struggling, to be honest. I'm struggling now, but it's fun. I smile. I have a big smile on my face when I'm rehearsing the songs. It's great fun. And I'm thinking, what? Did I write this? And why? Why did I complicate everything, you know? And I was thinking, you know, because we as probably you know, or maybe you were even there, we were playing this cruise a couple of years back, and with Flower Kings, and we were playing a set with John Anderson, and right. And we were supposed to play three songs, I think, and you and I and Starship Trooper and one more Long Distance Runner on, I think. Yeah. And suddenly John just sent an email saying, "Oh, how about we play the first side of Topographic Oceans?" I don't think Mike ever heard Topographic Ocean. I don't think he ever heard Topographic Oceans. Pete maybe heard it. But, you know, and I said, yeah, come on, I love that, you know. And then I thought, no, that's impossible to play. But I was thinking, and then I said, well, we still have like whatever, 3 months, you know, to learn the song. So I said, okay, I think Mike and Neil said probably yes without knowing the complexity of the song. And I knew, and particularly I would say Steve Howe's guitar work, which is very odd, you know, because he's not like a regular guitar, as you know. He's not a regular guitar player. There's lots of really odd timing and lots of improvising and stuff that you need to learn. And I mean, just listening to the song. But I mean, I love the song and I love that album, so... How can I possibly say no to playing the first side of Topographic? So we said yes, you know. Yeah. And that was super complicated. But then, I mean, I felt it was super complicated in comparison to Transatlantic or the Flower Kings. But now, after being, you know, away from the Flower Kings music for some time, and I go back and play, I probably say, this music is the most complicated music I ever played in my life.
that's funny.
I couldn't really see it that way when we were in the middle of everything. I realize now how super complicated the music of the Flower Kings is. I couldn't really see it before. But now it's like a new beginning, sort of.
I think one of the things about the band in general is, I think it's sort of, to me, it's always been a band that embraces that kind of, you know, the yes side of the more ethereal side of things, but also mixes in the kind of darker, you know, King Crimson side of things. You've kind of got something like The Devil's Playground, which, you know, lyrically is quite dark and bleak, that you could never really imagine John Anderson singing, you know. But that's one of the things, you know, about the Flower Kings albums that I like, that there's such a breadth of styles within them, even though within this thing that we call kind of prog, you know. My next choice then, going back to the period when I kind of first connected with the band, Rainmaker album 2001, and Last Minute on Earth, which begins with the that strange album opening of the Throat Singers. If you remember that, it's funny how music reminds you of different things. But I remember being in Paris at the Pompidou Center once and seeing some of those guys outside performing and being transfixed at that, this weird stuff. And you know, that song has a one of those kind of angular sort of dark you know, rock bass riffs at that, those sort of album openers that that Roina talked about.
Last meaning on earth, what would you do? Who would you call? Your mobile is down, you'll go down in history on that final day.
Again, a very melodic chorus, you know, dropping back to an acoustic interlude. And it's the maybe this first or the second album with Jonas in the band. And he's doing his fretless bass in different sections on that. How did he come about to be connected to the band, Roina?
It was actually on recommendation from the drummer at the time, Jaime. He knew Jonas, and my brother, who was in the band, had a daytime job, or he got a very, very good daytime job.
Yeah.
As you know, a booking agent for a big outdoor venue in the center of Stockholm. You know, so he couldn't really turn that down, and so I actually, to be able to keep on touring, I needed to get another bass player. You know. And so Jaime recommended Jonas because he didn't know Jonas that well, but he maybe jammed with him once or twice, and he knew people who knew Jonas and said he can play anything, and surely he can play anything.
Yeah.
And he's a funny guy too.
Yeah, and well, I mean, he's become one of these guys that pops up on every album, almost like you. I mean, Jonas is everywhere.
Yep.
Which is and he's awesome, amazing player. All right, I'm going to jump in to my number three, and I think we mentioned the title before, but I'm gonna have it as my third choice, which is "Truth Will Set You Free" from "Unfold the Future." Another one of these long epics that is, I mean, everything that the Flower Kings is. You know, I love the epics. I always seem to go back to the long songs. And that's another one that always stands out to me. And I think it's one that, even after only hearing it a couple of times, it almost just, it seems like it's written in a way that nothing's forced in there. It's almost all kind of naturally there, because right away after just a few listens, you sort of remember a 30-minute song, which just almost makes no sense, you know. But it's just written in such a natural feeling way to me, the way it came out.
That's what you try to do all the time, or most of the time. Sometimes you go for something, you actually try to write something that would have a section that is surprising. But I mean, normally you try to have a flow, you know, themes coming in and out, and you have whatever, the chorus coming back, but with a church organ, or the guitar theme coming back, but in a different tempo or different key or something like that. That's the trick of writing prog rock or symphonic rock.
Right.
And so would you...
I might add also that actually "The Truth Will Set You Free" was also my song, next song of choice. So we're sort of saving time.
All right, great. So continue talking about it.
Absolutely. And another thing is actually both that one and the other one you mentioned, let me see, was it from the Rainmaker, Last Minute on Earth. Both those songs are on the set list now for our show. So,
oh, perfect.
So I sort of reconnected with the songs just recently, and I know them inside and out, so to speak.
Perfect. You know, Unfold the Future is another one of the more celebrated albums. Was there anything special that went into writing that record at the time?
I don't know. I think it was just a very, very creative time for the band. You know, we were playing to bigger audiences. We were, I don't know. There was just something about something happening around that time. You know, and maybe I think we were selling more albums. And I think actually, Unfold the Future is our best-selling album up to this date.
Yeah.
So I think we were just creative, and I remember we were talking, me and Thomas and Jonas, and I think between me and Thomas we said, we have lots of material, why don't we make another double album? And then we were sort of laughing because we were thinking, well, we actually did Start As We Are, which was a double album, and then we did Flower Power, which was a double album, and then in between we made Space Revolver and Rainmaker, and we kind of it became almost like a joke, you know, like a band joke that we should go back to making double albums again.
Well, Neil has the same problem, right? Yeah, Neil always says that he starts every album not deciding to not write a double album, and it always ends up a double album.
Yeah, I know. And we were thinking, okay, the Beatles made one double album. We can make more than that, you know.
Well, and their double album is not as long as one of your one single albums.
Yeah. And the thing about it is with the Kingdom of Colors box sets, whenever you actually put all of that together, there's still three albums worth of bonus tracks. There's three full CDs of bonus tracks on top of the double albums and the single albums and everything else.
I apologize for that, guys.
No, it's great. No,
I'm still making my way through those discs. By the way, we should mention the Kingdom of Colors boxes. Thanks for bringing that up, Jeff, because those are amazing. There's two of them covering the first few albums, and the other one covers the second half of the Flower Kings. They're really well put together in a nice box, and they're just awesome. So if you're missing any music, that's a great collection.
The first one is really hard to get now.
Is it?
I know. I think they sort of miscalculated. They were thinking maybe we sell whatever 5,000 or something, and then I've seen it. People are asking for it, and it's sort of turning out at ridiculous costs at whatever eBay and. Yep. Stuff like that. So it's really difficult to know because, you know, many people have the albums already. Will they buy the box? And how many people are there out there that want to buy a box like this because they don't may have one or two CDs and they want to, you know, collect the rest. But it's absolutely super difficult for the record label to know how many should we press. And, right. and the thing is, a box like this is not something that you do like a regular CD, because a regular CD, you just like do a reorder.
Yeah.
But for this, it's kind of complicated to do reorder because I don't know the specifics around it, but it's, as you know, it's a box and you have the CDs inside and, you know. But they're super nice and I think it's a really nice price. And I actually remixed Untold the Future for that.
Yep.
Particular box, which is nice because it's a much better mix, I think, in my opinion, at least.
Great.
But
yep.
For anyone that want to connect with the Flower Kings, I think it's absolutely a bargain.
Absolutely. All right, Jeff, number two.
Number two, well, we've already talked about it. My number two was the Flower King track. I wondered whenever I wrote that down, was I cheating because it wasn't technically a The Flower Kings track, but I'm glad that Ron already had that. And we've talked about that quite a bit. I suppose the one question I had, and it's more a general one, but that's a good example, is, you know, when you go about writing something like that, is that something that you'll kind of, that you'll have, you know, a song like that, which has a sort of, you know, a start and an ending and lots of stuff going on in between, will that be a, you know, you have 30 ideas and you sit and try and work out which four or five fit, you know, best together? Or will that be something where you'll have sort of thought through the different sections that that will involve?
Well, as you know, it was a long, long time ago, but as I remembered it, and I think it's actually a fact, I had the mid parts, that's what I had, and I kind of liked them, but it felt like, I don't know, it felt like fragments of ideas of instrumental stuff that was great, that was interesting, but it didn't feel like a song. So I think I just sat down with an acoustic guitar and I felt like, well, this song will be so much better if it actually had a vocal part or something that's more sort of down to earth, or you know, more like a sing-along, singer-songwriter part, you know, because it makes for a nice balance. So I think that's what happened, you know, and I just placed the vocal parts in the beginning of the song and at the end of the song.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, normally it would be the other way around. You have a song and then you think the song needs something more. It needs a couple of interesting solo bits in the middle. But in this case, I had the solo bits in the middle, but I didn't have the actual song. So that happened when I actually was in the studio working with the song. I felt I need to spend a few hours fixing this. And I think actually the vocals and the lyrics came very, very quickly. It didn't take me long, maybe an hour.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And what is the Flower King?
$1 million question.
I tell you what the Flower King is. It's interesting. I think most people don't care, really, to be honest. But the truth is, the Flower King is actually a guy who lived here in Sweden in the 1700s. Called Carl von Linné. I'm sure that the name doesn't ring a bell for you guys, but he was actually the guy who named, he traveled all around the world, you know, into South America and to faraway places, to Asia, and found and named flowers that he found, you know. He has the, like, this big botanical garden here in my hometown in Uppsala. So I live actually in the town where he was born and where he lived with his family in the 1700s. And he's a very, very famous guy here in Sweden. Everyone knows who he is, but I think outside of Sweden, I'm not sure. But he named all the flowers in Latin, so I think that's kind of a global thing. So if you take out a book with checking out flowers and you read the Latin names, it's this guy from my little town in Sweden who named the flowers in Latin.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
that's a cool story.
I didn't know that. All out, and you know, and I think it's interesting. And so that was actually the reason why I thought of the name, the Flower King. It was connected to you know, to my hometown, to Sweden, and also the idea of the Flower King was this painting, you know, that I did just for fun, and everything sort of connected. And I said, why not call the band the Flower Kings, or call the album the Flower King, which of course I've regretted every now and then, but most of the time not. You know, there's always people, oh, that's not a cool name. That's not a cool. And in particular, of course, the English or the Americans, you know, they think, well, that's not a really cool name for a prog band, is it?
Oh, I think it's very proggy, though. I don't know. I do. I think it is. I think it works, yeah.
I've just read it. You know, people think it's, oh, they want to have something else. That's more, I don't know.
You can never read stuff online. Yeah. All right. Let me see. My second choice is one of the longest songs ever, Garden of Dreams. From Flower Power, this is 60 minutes. Was it written deliberately to be that length, or did you write the different smaller parts and it sort of eventually became there? Was it at some point only 40 minutes and then it just, you decided to make it longer? How did it end up that way?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you don't write a song that's 60 minutes in an instant. It's like you start writing and then 5 minutes later we have a 60-minute song. Because it will naturally take some time to write a song that length. But I think, if I remember right, this was actually something that happened back in maybe 98 or 97. And I had an office because the business at the time was, you know, with recordings and you know, touring and everything. You know, I had this, my kids were small at the time, so I couldn't be at home, you know, because they were making noises, you know. I couldn't be on the phone and all that, so I had to rent an office. Anyways, I rented this office and I had some keyboards and stuff there, and Thomas came over and we were talking, and I said we need maybe to start writing music for the next album, and he showed me something which is the beginning of Garden of Dreams, and I said, well, that's beautiful, that's great melody here. But he had a couple of minutes, and I said, let us just keep writing, you know, and see what comes up. So we were gradually just expanding the song with more themes, and I think somewhere around the 25 minute line, I think we were just laughing and say, this is going to be a long song. And I think at that point, actually, I think Thomas said something like, why not just keep going, you know? Yeah. And I said, yeah, why not? we can make it as long as we can, you know, but there's a limitation. A CD can hold maybe at the time, I can't remember now, about 60 minutes, something like that. So that will be the limit for the song in any case. I said, it to me, it doesn't matter if it's 35 or 40 minutes. But we just, you know, we met the next day and we kept writing as long as we found the song interesting. And then, you know, we kept going for a week. I think Thomas worked at the theater at the time also. So if I remember right, I finished maybe the last 7 or 8 or 10 minutes myself, you know, and just the big finale. But he was throwing in things and I was throwing in things. And once we had the melodies and stuff, I started writing lyrics, and we, you know, just saw this song gradually expanding into whatever, I can't remember now, about 59 minutes, I think.
There's no such thing as blank and total darkness.
I mean, it's interesting because it not only is it has that sort of unique sort of gimmicky thing when you look at it and you see it's 60 minutes, which is always intriguing, but yeah. It's actually interesting throughout. It's entertaining. There's good parts. It's well written. In fact, I mean, you could argue it's an album by itself, but incredible achievement. And really, I mean, you know, if you look at what you and again, we talked about Neil before, but what you guys were doing in that period of the late 90s there really is evolving to a lot of people following into writing more of these epics. I mean, there's not, other than Supper's Ready in the 70s and you know, Topographic Oceans and some things like that, the long 30-minute epic was not a common thing. It's seems way more common now, but I think that really comes from what you guys created.
Could be. I mean, I the way I look at it now, a song like Garden of Dreams is more like, I think it has more similarities to maybe to the Beatles' Abbey Road side two.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's more like songs stitched together, whereas songs like Devil's Playground or The Truth Will Set You Free is actually one song with different themes, you know. Right. Or if you look at Yes, Close to the Edge, for instance, it's like one song with different themes. So I think that Garden of Dreams is more like a collection of songs, the way I see it, at least. We were sort of tagging new ideas, new song bits onto each other, and then we ended up with this epic, which was, of course, an achievement, and we were laughing all the way. And I remember, I think it could have been Mike or Neil, they were, when they realized we had done this super epic, you know, they said, oh, I realized you guys did a song that's almost an hour, you know. I think Mike said, we got to do a song that's an hour. Which we
did. That's right. Yeah, that's funny. We couldn't have this list between three of us and not have that song on it. I'm glad I put that on. Yeah. Okay, Roine, your last song, your number one.
My number one. What was my number one? My number one is actually the song "Start As We Are," which is the title song of the album "Start As We Are." That's for me. I mean, altogether, that album is a very happy album, a very creative album. I think the band, and in particular me and Thomas, were at the peak as far as the writing and ideas and experimenting and everything. The album as a whole has lots of great ideas and great melodies and great themes. The song, "The Start As We Are," has, of course, the closing section with has the most recognized vocal part, you know, with "Start As We Are," which is kind of catchy. It's something that we played for a long, long, long time in the live sets. But I think also the other parts of the song, for me, are a lot of fun to play. They are interesting as far as themes and time signatures and, the development of the song itself is, there's just something about it, you know. Maybe I see it, well, through rose-colored glasses. Because at the time we were, you know, we were in a phase of getting more recognition on the prog scene and getting lots of offers to play lots of festivals. So it was a very happy time. And we were very creative. You know, we had not much money to go into big studios. So we were actually recording in our rehearsal place, you know, with like a reel-to-reel machine and then hooked up with whatever, ADAT or something like that. So we were just creating with whatever we had, you know, and Thomas was bringing his synths and his ideas, and we were doing lots of crazy stuff and having lots of fun and being, all this crazy stuff, like Circus Brimstone is another great song on that album. But I think the collection of songs on that double album is actually, in my personal view, the peak of the band as far as being creative and inventing songs and in the typical Flower King style. And I think the song "Start As We Are" is something that present a lot of that. So I have to pick that as my number one.
Sail the sea, the moon and the stars, build this window beneath the pool, lend a hand to drown and see the saviors come so cheap. We lose our touch and now we go into the deep. Driving down the memory lane, dusty dreams from a fading sun. Remember how the horses run. We play the stars, we walk the moon, we burnt the rope, lay down the gun. Start as we are, close to the
Incredible song, one of the all-time best songs, I think. I would agree. Jeff, what is your number one?
Yeah, well, so my number one is the first song on the first Flower Kings album that I bought, which is I Am the Sun, part one, from Space Revolver. And again, that was straight after Transatlantic. And, you know, I guess this was back in the day when music was perhaps less disposable than it is today. I can remember ordering it from one of the mail order companies that specialized in prog. And, you know, you had the, it's not quite the vinyl days, but you had that excitement of the CD landing and from an artist who you didn't really know. And that first track just made me go, yeah. And I think one of the things we haven't actually mentioned, but actually it came to mind when we were talking about Garden of Dreams, that and I don't know whether this is a particularly a European thing, and I guess I can probably comment, seeing as that we're just about still in Europe here in the UK, you know, but the sort of the slightly humorous lyrics, which maybe, you know, if you look at Garden of Dreams, you know, Attack of the Monster Briefcase and Mr. Hope Goes Down Wall Street, you know, and, you know, you've got I Am the Sun, which is, you know, grow my beard, I'm still a child, the Danny Kaye of present day. Yeah. And then there's that kind of jazz breakdown in the middle where there's the I Left My Heart in San Francisco, you know.
Right.
And that kind of humor is something that I think is probably quite, it's maybe back from the Genesis days. It's certainly more European. I think some of maybe the more serious bands wouldn't venture into that territory. But I really like that song. And the part two then closes the album out. Was that originally envisaged as one long thing that you broke up?
It was the idea was to do one song, but I think it was my idea to actually cut it into two, because I felt it, we have done many times like opening with this big epic, and I don't know, it just felt like maybe the song was too much to have in one go. So I don't know, it was like a very fast decision, and I said how about just trying to do the first part and then put another song or a couple of other songs in between. And then in the end it ended up, well, what about taking the song and let this song book and the album as a whole, you know. That's nice, you know, and you heard it on many other albums, of course, with bands doing that kind of thing, you know. All from Beatles, Sgt. Pepper, you know, when they're doing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band coming back in the end, you know, in a kind of rockier version. But
yeah.
And it has this, the other thing, it has this very big symphonic ending.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I felt was the right way to end the album. And, I mean, we haven't talked about it since then, so I suppose everyone was okay. But, you know, it was actually one long song from the beginning, and we just split it up. And there was no more talk about it.
Dead and shortcuts just the same. I'm the master of my game. Disciplina, you may say. Danny Kaye of present day. Close my hand and wave my wand. Brainchild of your one man. Now I'm on the peak. Never forget. Never give in to the big sleep, fast becoming now. I'm at the edge. Never reject what I offer. Never believe what they tell you. Let's move a mountain.
So I didn't want to say it before because it's going to be, you know, I knew I was coming up with my number one, but my number one is also Stardust We Are. And so I figured I would save my little piece until now. But look, I not to go too much extra about what, because you obviously, you know, what you said was from the person who wrote it. So, but I could tell you the perspective of just somebody listening to it. And, you know, the long epic thing, it's interesting because you're always, I'm always drawn to them as a lot of prog fans are, but there's something about certain ones that makes them stand out, that become more memorable, that become sort of the classics, the favorites, you know, Supper's Ready is one, Stranger in Your Soul, Transatlantic for me and for a lot is one. The Stardust We Are is absolutely in that category for me. And, you know, the ending, not only the part where the vocal part ending, but after you think everything is almost done, and then it comes back with the last couple of minutes with that little guitar thing, that little melody at the, is just like my favorite part. And it's so simple and pretty. And it's just a memorable, brilliant little line that gets played over there to close out the song. And I think it's like one of the ones as a new prog fan, it belongs in the education. You know what I mean? Like that's the, one of the songs that every prog fan should know. And the album's a masterpiece as well. So
I think it's interesting what you say. We're talking about these songs, and I find out that a lot of the songs that you mentioned now is actually on the set list. So I wouldn't take credit for it, because we're like I said, Hass and the other guys in the band have suggested songs for the set list, but it seemed like we zoomed in on the right songs, because you are two guys. And I feel pretty much the same. The songs we have been talking about now are most of them in the set list. Not Garden of Dreams, of course, because it's too long.
Right.
but the others, like Stardust and The Truth and The Flower King and I Am the Sun, etc. So that's interesting, you know. So
very cool. You're on the right track. Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the right track. It seems.
All right, so well, Roynat, this was—I can't tell you how much fun stuff like this is for us prog geeks to be able to sit and do this kind of stuff with you. And I hope it wasn't too painful, and you had a little bit of fun with it.
No. I had my coffee, and I had my coffee, and I'm sitting in a nice studio chair, so everything's fine.
Awesome. okay, so just to recap, new album, Roy Nastolt, The Flower King, Manifesto of an Alchemist comes out November 23rd. The single Lost America is out now. Maybe by the time this airs, there'll be a second single coming out. I'll try to get this out soon. And don't forget, if you're in South America or Europe, catch the band on tour. This is, by every indication, going to be an amazing show. And thanks again, Roy. I appreciate it. And thank you for the time. And, you know, we'll talk again soon. Jeff, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.